Podcasting from the Deep Sage 9 Observatory in the high desert near Taos, New Mexico, this is the Deep Sage 9 Starcast. Welcome back to the Starcast for the week of February 8th, 2026. I'm your host, Jay Schaefer, and with me is my co-host, Mike Lewinsky. Howdy, Mike.
Howdy, Jay. How are you doing today?
Oh, grand. It's been kind of a busy week in space weather, so what's happening over the next couple days?
Well, Jay, there is a chance of a G1 class storm today, February 8th, as a slow-moving CME is expected to reach Earth. We're also keeping an eye on sunspot 4366 that has a beta-gamma-delta magnetic field that poses a continued threat of X-class solar flares. So we're going to have 4366 around for another day or two here before it rotates away. So what this all translates to in terms of specific numbers for our forecast is here in mid-latitudes, approximately a 40% chance of active geomagnetic conditions today, 30% tomorrow, and declining from there. We have only a 1% chance of a severe storm. However, if you happen to live at higher latitudes, we have a 60% chance of severe storm today and a 40% chance tomorrow. And our chance of M-class flare is 75% for the next 2 days and 25% chance for an X-class flare. So what's happening in the night sky this week, Jay?
Well, Mike, it's the last quarter moon. It rises around 1 a.m. tonight. That would be exactly the last quarter moon at 7:43 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Monday morning. And so with the moon waning this week, we've got dark skies early in the evening, and it's a great time to observe Orion, Sirius, Jupiter, and even the winter Milky Way. So if you look toward the southeastern horizon and find Sirius, the dog star, which is the brightest star in the night sky, you can go from there and look upward and locate Orion the Hunter. And most of us can identify Orion with its quintessential and unmistakable, even in light-polluted areas. It features a distinctive belt of three stars and a tight diagonal row framed by a tall, boxy quartet of bright stars making it its torso. So Orion is actually part of the Milky Way, the winter Milky Way anyway. And while this winter Milky Way is more subtle than the more dense band seen in the summer, it offers a unique perspective as we look outward along the galaxy's spiral arm, as opposed to looking inward towards Sagittarius in the core of the galaxy in the summertime. This region, known as the Orion Arm, is packed with brilliant nearby stars because we are peering through the central plane of our galaxy. If you're viewing from the northern hemisphere, the Milky Way now stretches from north to south, adorned with the deep sky objects and a parade of bright stars like Capella. For those south of the equator, it's their summer Milky Way, and their view becomes even more dramatic as Orion rides high in the sky, leading a glowing stellar river that flows all the way down to the Southern Cross. Mike, what do you have for us in space news today?
Jay, before I jump into space news, I just want to call out Sirius again. You know, it is the brightest star in the night sky, and it's so striking. I can't tell you how many times I've looked up and seen Sirius and said, oh, there's a UFO over there. My girlfriend April had the same experience this week driving at night, and what is that? And we were out in the hot tub a couple nights later and had a little conversation about it. And, you know, Sirius is a very cool binary star. And it is just the most striking star. And I think it's worth just pointing out here that it is moving closer to the mil to us in our position. And in, I don't know, 60,000 years or so, it is going to, through precession, become this southern pole star. So it's definitely worth checking out. So over to space news. In a study recently published in the monthly notices of the Royal Astronomical Society, an international team of researchers has proposed a radical alternative to the long-held belief that a supermassive black hole sits at the center of the Milky Way. Rather than the invisible gravity of Sagittarius A, the study suggests that the galactic core may actually be home to an enormous dense clump of fermionic dark matter. According to the international team, which included lead author Valentina Crespi and co-author Carlos Arguelles from the Institute of Astrophysics La Plata, this dark matter core model explains both the rapid high-speed orbits of the S stars near the center and the large-scale rotation curves of the galaxy's outer edges in a single unified framework. These studies' findings are particularly significant because they address long-standing discrepancies in how astronomers measure the mass and rotation of the Milky Way. By utilizing the latest data from the European Space Agency's Gaia mission, the researchers demonstrated that a specific type of light subatomic particle, known as a fermion, could form a structure dense enough to mimic the gravitational pull of a black hole while simultaneously providing the halo required to stabilize the galaxy's outskirts. While current data cannot yet definitively rule out a black hole, the researchers emphasize that their model successfully bridges the gap between different scales of cosmic motion. Future observations from the Very Large Telescope in Chile will seek out specific photon rings, a hallmark of black holes that would be absent in a dark matter core, to further test this groundbreaking theory. In other news, a major victory for the global scientific community, the American energy company AES Andes has canceled plans for a massive renewable energy industrial complex in Chile's Atacama Desert that threatens some of the world's most advanced observatories. The proposed INA, INNA project, which included city-sized wind and solar farms, a desalination plant, and a port, would have been located just miles from the European Southern Observatory's Paranal site. Following a year of intense advocacy from international astronomers, including Nobel laureate Reinhard Genzel, who warned that the facility would increase light pollution by 35% and cause disruptive ground vibrations, the company decided to scrap the site to preserve the region's unique, pristine, dark skies. This decision ensures the continued viability of critical research at the Very Large Telescope and the upcoming Extremely Large Telescope and safeguards Chile's role as premier window into the universe.
Thanks, Mike. That story demonstrates just how important preserving our ancestral dark skies is. And since we're both dark sky advocates, I thought we could discuss the upcoming Dark Sky Week in April and what people and communities can do to prepare. Mike?
Yeah, thanks, Jay. This is, I think, a very important and near to my heart and your heart topic. International Dark Sky Week draws attention to the problems associated with light pollution and promotes simple solutions that are available to mitigate it. Created in 2003 by high school student Jennifer Barlow, International Dark Sky Week has grown to become a worldwide event and a key component of Global Astronomy Month. The annual global event is held during the week of the new moon in April to raise awareness about light pollution and to celebrate the beauty of the natural night sky. For 2026, this week is observed from April 13th to the 20th. So here's an overview of how individuals and communities can participate. For our listeners at home, you can conduct a lighting audit. Check your home's outdoor lighting against the five principles for responsible outdoor lighting. Ensure that lights are only on when needed using a timer or sensor. Ensure that they are shielded and pointing down, that they are no brighter than necessary, that you're using warm tone lights, and that you're only using them where they are actually needed. You can also take the official pledge. In our show notes this week, we'll have a link to the Dark Sky Pledge, You can commit to protecting the night and help the organization reach its goal of 10,000 signatories. And you can become a citizen scientist. Use the Globe at Night app or website to measure the brightness of your night sky and submit data to help scientists track light pollution globally. You can also capture the dark, participate in photography challenges, or simply go outside to observe constellations. Share photos on social media with the hashtag #IDSW to help spread the message. And, you know, ensure that you're protecting wildlife during spring migration. Participate in the Lights Out initiative to help birds navigate safely without the disorientation caused by bright city lights. You can also work with your local community in advocacy and education efforts. Request an official proclamation. Individuals can reach out to your mayor or city council to request an official proclamation recognizing International Dark Sky Week. This raises the profile of the issue with local government and can lead to permanent lighting ordinances. You can host or attend events. Communities often organize star parties, guided night walks, or educational workshops. If there isn't one near you, consider hosting a small gathering to look at the stars or lead a lighting walk to show neighbor the difference between good and bad lighting. You can also engage with local institutions, libraries, schools, or bookstores to create dark sky themed displays or educational programs about the impact of light pollution on human health and local ecosystems. There are also virtual sessions hosted by Dark Sky International featuring astrophysicists, conservationists, and lighting experts to learn about the latest in dark sky preservation. And consider joining or supporting a Dark Sky International chapter to work on long-term advocacy, such as retrofitting public streetlights or certifying your town as an international dark sky community. So here in Crestone, we do host quarterly star parties. Our next one is actually coming up on the spring equinox, March 21st. And we do that at the South Crestone Baca Park. There's usually five or six of us who bring out telescopes and do, sky tours. And we are planning for our upcoming Dark Sky celebration in August of this year. So I'm working on a monthly basis with my fellow committee members to organize, get speakers and musical acts and vendors and all the fun things that we're going to do in August. So, you know, this is important ongoing work. I'm also in communication with the Colorado Visitor Center down in Alamosa, and I will be taking a thumb drive to them with some of my night sky photography and time-lapse videos. They have a couple of TVs in that visitor center that display local footage for visitors who are passing through. And so we're talking with them about how we can get some more dark sky footage in there. They're very on board with that mission and have hosted or co-hosted with SLV Go, the Great Outdoors organization, some star parties down in the wildlife preserve outside of Alamosa. And there is one other point that I wanted to make, and now it has just escaped my mind. So maybe before we wrap up, it'll pop back into my head. Jay, what are you doing down there in New Mexico?
Well, we do have a pretty active chapter with the New Mexico Dark Sky. And so they are, you know, advocating for some dark sky areas in New Mexico. And so for the International Dark Sky Week celebration, one of the things I'm participating in is the Eyes in the Dark Astrophotography Exhibition at the Aurora Gallery at Sarah McIntyre Photography in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And Sarah is the chair of the local chapter in their educational and outreach community for the New Mexico Dark Sky chapter. And she's donating 50% of the entry fees from the show to Dark Sky International. And this is also an opportunity astrophotographers to display their work and actually sell their photographs. So that's something that I'm really excited about participating in. And I'm also active with our local astronomy club, the El Vol Astronomy Club. And we are also hosting a photo exhibition and dark sky presentation during Dark Sky Week here in Taos. And so we just had our annual meeting last night, and the club is also working with the BLM and Dark Sky International to get a dark sky park designation for the Wild Rivers Recreation Area near Cuesta, New Mexico, and also the Rio Grande National Monument, Rio Grande National Monument. And so they're doing some sky quality measurements using SQM meters. And Mike, I know that you are also doing dark sky measurements in Crestone, and are you submitting those to what is it, the Globe at Night app, and which is kind of basically the SQM database that the Dark Sky International is using.
You know, Jay, I have that on my to-do list. The SQM at my house is still relatively new. We do have another member of the Crestone Dark Sky Foundation who hosts and has been hosting and contributing his readings for several years. So I just need to get some connecting details. It's not immediately straightforward how to do that. I think I'm going to have to send some emails to get a login credentials to actually start uploading. But I am saving my data locally, and find it very interesting to watch, both the moon cycles and things like, airglow can alter what my readings are. That sky quality meter is measuring the darkness, or rather the brightness of the night sky in magnitudes per square arc second, and higher values are darker. So currently the sun is up and my reading is zero. That's the brightest that the reading will report. And as I look back at my readings overnight, I peaked at around 21.47, I think was about my highest, 21.53. Looks like I hit overnight. And then the moon rose and it dropped down into the 20 range before dawn. By the way, Jay, I did remember the other item that I'm hoping to do this summer in conjunction with the Crestone Dark Sky Foundation, and pending some approval from the Colorado Native Plant Society. I would like to host a night sky or a nighttime hike to look for night blooming flowers and the pollinators that visit them. So, when we talk about wildlife at night, it's often, focused on birds in particular who do their migrations. But there is a lot of migration, sorry, a lot of pollination that happens, with flowers that either bloom only at night or that bloom and last through the night and are visited by insects that are only active at night. And of course, I see a lot of moss when I point my time lapse at flowers. House lights are going to divert those moths. So, dark sky principles and lighting aware strategies can, have really wide-ranging effects, when we're talking about plants that may be threatened or endangered and rely on a very specialized set of pollinators who could be diverted away from their source of food and away from the pollination that they provide because of lights that are left on all night. So I think that's about what I've got on this topic, Jay. Do you have anything else?
No, I just read, I guess we can put in the store, the show links is a link to your sky quality meter, and so they can, so if any of our listeners are interested in and getting doing that citizen science, they can do that as well.
Sure.
All right, we want to thank all of our listeners for checking out this podcast. Be sure to comment, like, and subscribe, and let us know what you'd like to hear more about. You can also check out our websites at wildernessvagabonds.com and skylapser.com. And you can check out Mike's time lapses and videos on the Mike Lewinsky YouTube channel. Just search Mike Lewinsky or time lapses. And you can see mine on the Skylapser YouTube channel. The intro music is Fanfare for Space by Kevin MacLeod from the YouTube Audio Library. From the Deep Sage 9 Observatory, this is Jay Schaefer and
Mike Lewinsky
wishing you all clear, dark skies.